House Military Veterans Affairs Order. It is 1:03 p.m. on Tuesday, March 14th. We're in the Grunberg Room in Juneau, the state capital. With me, I have Representative Gray, Representative Rauscher, Representative Groh, Representative Shaw, and myself, Chair Wright. Let the record reflect, we have a quorum to conduct business. Please put your cell phones on silence and mute them. I'd like to thank Talia Ames with the Juneau LIO for moderating today's meeting, and also Kevin Allen with House Records for documenting today's meeting. We have one item on the agenda today, House Bill 25, PFD, Eligibility Uniform Services. Before we start, I'd like to acknowledge for the record that we have a revised indeterminate fiscal note for department revenue, and that's for HB 25. We have Rep Story and his staff, Seth Witten, and they are here to answer any lingering questions from last week. Reverend Story, would you please, and your staff, please come forth and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Wright. Good to be before you again. Thank you, committee members, for being here. I just wanted to basically say this bill does four things for four groups who really, two of which are serving their country and have been left out of kind of a gap with not having an allowable allowance to be gone for serving in the NOAA Commission Officers Corps and the Public Health Service Commission's Officer Corps. And so I appreciate your looking at that. And then with the committee substitute, we added the Merchant Marines who were not an allowable absence because it wasn't an educational institution where they were paying money. So we're including that. And then also if there was a medical emergency in a family member right by the ending date. So I think that we're here to answer any questions, and we appreciate all the work and thought that's gone into this.
I thank you for the introduction. Let the record reflect that Representative Sandler joined us at 1:05. Please continue.
And I'd like to share that my staff, Seth Witten, is here, and he has a question or a response on the fiscal notes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Seth Witten, staff to Representative Andy Story. And actually, what I wanted to make sure to clarify, in our last meeting, committee members asked about the impact on individual dividends that this would have. On the record, I stated that it would be for every 100 additional people we added. If you took the calendar year 22 dividend of $3,284, that every 100 people would cost $4 per individual dividend. I had very much overestimated that number. I checked with Legislative Finance and had them run my numbers, and what they came back to me and said was for calendar year 22, it would have actually been for every additional 100 people who qualified for the dividend, it would have amounted to 52 cents that your dividend would have been less. So instead of 3,284, you would have gotten 3,283.48. So just wanted to note for the record that I greatly overestimated that fiscal impact.
Thank you. Were there any other questions that the committee had? Rep. Sandler?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Story, on page 4 of the bill, on line 7, it basically adds, it looks like my review of the statutes said that you're adding the "and before October 1 for the period during which somebody may, basically file a dividend after the application if they miss the application period. Just curious, what's the genesis of the "and before October 1? Why that date? Why not another date?
Thank you, Rep. Sandler, for that question. I might ask if Rep. Shaw knows the answer to that question, because this was an amendment that we sort of worked on together. And I think, and just not verifying this, I just know if someone had a medical emergency, it must have been a greater medical emergency to not get to apply by the 31st, and I'm just assuming whenever you have something that is can be very traumatic, it might take a while to do that. So I believe that was the grace period, but I'm certainly happy to look into that more. It's a good question.
And the other question I'd ask is, if you can answer it through the chair, Representative Story. My understanding is that statute already does provide that if a parent or guardian does not apply for a permanent fund dividend on behalf of their child or their child, that upon the child's reaching 18 years old, that child, now an adult, can actually apply for retroactive dividends. I'm not sure quite how this Section 3 of the bill cooperates or intertwines with that provision of state law. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. Can you explain it to me?
Through the chair, Seth Witten, staff to Representative Story. Representative Sadler, I apologize. I'm not familiar with that provision. What I know is that this would deal with dependents. So at a point at which a child is no longer dependent over the age of 18, this provision that we're adding is only for situations where so the filer, someone who would typically file for someone else who is their dependent, experiences a medical emergency, then they could receive an extension to file those applications for their dependents. But I apologize, I don't know the answer to retroactive dividends.
Sure. For the record, we do have Director Watusik and Mr. Wilkinson and Mr. Ireland on the line. Great. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. They grow out of what we talked about last time, but mainly it's concerns with the public health service in terms of long-term eligibility for dividends, year after year after year, as the first caller at the previous hearing talked about. I did reach out to a friend who works for public health service. Their feeling is that it's a very voluntary thing that you apply for a job opening, and if you accept that job, then you know that's where you're assigned, and that any deployment, quote unquote deployment, would be voluntary. You choose to go help after a hurricane event, that you wouldn't be forced to leave. And so I understand that, like, if you work for the FDA, maybe we don't have an FDA job in Alaska. Somebody applies for an FDA job in Wisconsin because that's where the job is. And then they go and work there for decades. I just think that it's unfortunate sometimes we don't have jobs available in Alaska, but I just don't think that's the same as we have for our military when they deploy and they get their dividend for that 9 months or 10 and a half months that they were gone. I feel like this is something different. And I have questions about these long-term dividend payments when they're not stepping foot in Alaska for years. Thank you.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Gray. I do believe Ledge Legal is looking into this, and it looks like it is a shorter time frame.
Representative Sandler?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I believe Ms. Watusik from the Division of Permanent Fund Dividends may have information about what the statutes deal with for how long somebody can be gone. So I might throw that question to the cloud if we could and see if Genevieve can answer.
Director Watusik, are you on the line?
For the record, Genevieve Watusik, PFD director. Representative Sadler, through the chair, are you referring to the 5-year rule?
Yes, through the chair, yes, Genevieve.
Okay. Yeah. Let me see where it is in statute, but yes, we do. And while I'm looking for that, I wanted to mention about, you had mentioned earlier about the regulation for those that are 18 to 20 years old that have missed PFDs that their parents did not apply for. That's under 15 AAC 23.133. And then the other regulation that is pertinent to this bill that we think is conflicting with the current writing with the health issue, the medical emergency issue, which we don't have a definition for, is 15 AAC 23.123. That's our current disabled application regulation, which does have a different time frame window. So we don't know if this is a competing regulation or an additional regulation that would be needed. So I just wanted to mention that. And then on the five-year rule, I wanted to say that it is under 43.23008D. That's the five-year rule that you were referring to. And I can read from that if you would like.
To the chair, that'd be helpful to me.
Yes, please.
Okay, it says, so 43.23008D says, after an individual has been absent from the state for more than 180 days in each of the five preceding qualifying years, the department shall presume that the individual is no longer a state resident. This individual may rebut this presumption by providing clear and convincing evidence to the department that, number one, the individual was physically present in the state for at least 30 cumulative days during the past 5 years, and number two, that the individual is a state resident as defined in 43.23.095. I believe that's what you were looking for, Representative.
Through the chair, Ms. Genevieve, which is, that's correct. Yes, ma'am.
I may speak. Thank you, Chair Wright, and thank you for that information. And we will look at those two statutes that seem to be not agreeing with one another and see if there's something that an adjustment maybe need to be made in the date.
Are there any more questions? So I'm going to set this an amendment deadline for HB 25 for tomorrow, Wednesday the 15th at 4 p.m. Please get it to my office as soon as you can. It'd be greatly appreciated. And then we will be hearing this bill once more on the 16th at 1 p.m. That concludes our agenda for today. If there is no other business, I conclude this House Special Military Veterans Affairs Committee at 1:15.